Secrets can lead to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding can cause fear. Everyone knows what fear can do. We are here to learn and shine the bright light of truth on these stories. You will know why Show Me Scares.
Hello, hello.
Hi, guys.
I'm Shayla.
And I'm Terry.
Welcome to Show Me Scares.
Did you have a good Easter?
Yeah. My brother was up here with and his wife and children, the whole lot of them. Family so get together and we were exhausted. We had my niece stay the night with us that night. That was tiring.
She just has to sleep in the same room as us.
And with Scooby-Doo on constantly.
All night long.
Man, oh man. So when you're like Terry and I and you can't sleep with a light or anything on, little Scooby-Doo playing at the foot of the bed.
Oh, it was awful.
It was terrible. But
it was good times. I'd do it again.
Yeah, she's fun. They're all fun. So we're a little late again, but basically I just can't handle the pressure. So I just have to put it off sometimes, especially since we were so busy over the holiday weekend that we were really exhausted and we had real life stuff that we needed to do.
I don't know how moms do it.
Me either. The little buggers just wear me out.
For sure. And having four of them, holy moly.
Yeah. Woof. So anyway, this is a story that I have been so excited to tell. It's been on the list since the very beginning, and I have put it off so many times because it is such a huge piece, I think, in my opinion, of Missouri history. It's not, I wouldn't say that this kind of thing is completely exclusive to Missouri, especially during the time after the Civil War, but it's a huge part of our history that I think a lot of people probably aren't fully aware of, all the things that happened. So we're talking about the Bald Knobbers.
Wah, wah, wah.
Not the show in Branson. So the Bald Knobbers basically was a vigilante group, for lack of a better way of saying that. Mm-hmm. And during the 1880s, they kind of led the law in Taney County especially, but they spread out into Christianstone and other neighboring counties. But we're going to start this, and I'm just going to say at the very beginning, we will not make it through this whole thing in this episode.
What? A two-parter?
At least. It might be three.
Wow.
This is a huge story with a ton of stuff, and I have done so much research for months on this. And I have enough information and enough stories to tell that I think it's going to span a great deal of time.
That's exciting.
So once, if I start seeing we're running out of time, I'll cut us short on this episode. And then we'll just continue on the next episode.
I like it.
So I'm excited to talk about this one. It has a particularly terrible ending.
And thanks for the warning.
Yeah, just so you're aware, you're going to go through all this and it's going to end horribly. I have told you many times that there's a story that I wanted to tell, and this is one of the ones that we had talked about doing as a live for the first time.
But you didn't
want
to be emotional?
I don't think I can make it through it, the ending for sure, without just maybe getting sick. So,
anyway,
let's get right to it so we don't spend too much time on other things. With so much story to tell. We've talked many times about Missouri during the Civil War, how it's particularly bloody here because we were split down the middle by the Union and Confederate armies. And the result was the land became just wild and completely lawless. There were guerrilla groups. Bushwhackers were very prominent in that time. And they just all kind of rained terror over the region. There was nobody being held accountable for anything, and people just ran kind of wild here. Before the war in Taney County, it's reported that only three murders took place. Between the years of 1865 and 1885, there were between 30 and 40 murders is what it's, what everybody says. Mm-hmm. I can't find that to corroborate any of that, mm-hmm. but that is the going story. So whether that's true or not, I'm just putting it out there that that's what has been said.
A bit of a rise.
Yes. And the corruption was rampant, as most of the people charged were acquitted by friends or family members that were sitting on their jury.
Of course.
It's believed that of all of those murders, there was maybe one person ever convicted.
That said.
Yes. So, unless they were a serial killer, a lot of people did not get held accountable for mm-hmm. those murders. Nathaniel Kenny. He was a large, domineering man, standing 6'5" tall and weighing in over 250 pounds.
What an ox.
He's a big guy. Or was. He had moved to Taney County in 1883 from Springfield, where he had been a saloon keeper.
Oh.
He started a Sunday school 4 miles south of Forsyth at the Oak Grove Schoolhouse. So, bar owner to Sunday school owner. He stood at the pulpit with an open Bible in front of him and a revolver on each hip.
Wow.
Yes. He preached against the lawlessness, social chaos, and moral depravity of the area. Many of the men in the area were former soldiers who had put all of their money into their homesteads trying to build a better life after the war. Criminals were stealing their cattle and hogs, and the county was nearly bankrupt from the people who were squatting without paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
This was a huge political kind of almost what we're going through now, where everything that happened, the Democrats blamed the Republicans blamed the Democrats, and mm-hmm. and they were both corrupt, and you know, depending on who you were talking to, and the truth was they were just both corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of it. And so it has a lot of political undertones, and I kind of left a lot of those out, mainly because I wasn't interested. And it might play an important part in the story, mm-hmm. but in my opinion, it just doesn't.
Right.
They had sentiments that spanned, for instance, Nathaniel Kenny was, he was a Union soldier and a Republican, but he ran on a Democratic ticket at one point. So mm-hmm. I don't think that that was really as important as what it's made out to mm-hmm. be. And maybe it is, and I'm just completely misled, but to me, I don't really care about that. The juice of the story has it's not political for me. So, whatever. But the taxes that weren't being paid, the rising debt of the county was a big driving force for Nathaniel Kenny. He just kind of came in, and this is kind of my issue with him, is he came in and was like, "What the hell are y'all doing here? Your county is broke."
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, who the hell are you, dude? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was, he just kind of came in and took over in a way, which was odd to me. But, you know, maybe that's just who he was. I don't know. So these men who had tried making their lives here, they're looking for any reason, a leader to bring them together and a force to bring an end to all this turmoil. Their patience was nearing a breaking point. And that point came September 1883 with the murder of James Everett.
Was he an important guy?
Well, they all were. It's mm-hmm. the 1880s. There's like 10 people live in town. You know what I mean?
Everybody
like,
knows everybody yeah. for sure.
Nat Kinney was friends with Everett and described him as a prominent merchant of the town in the liquor business. He owned a store located on the east side of Forsyth Town Square. The back room housed a billiard table, and the front room served as a bar and store. His brother, Barton, helped him run the establishment. Barton was referred to as Yell because of his penchant for speaking louder than necessary. The brothers sold extremely potent whiskey, generally called 40 Rod. Not familiar.
Sounds nasty.
On the 22nd of September, 1883, Al Layton and his friend Sam Hull were at Everett's playing pool and drinking. Layton had kind of a reputation that was overall bad, that of a roughneck, let's say, rowdy, rambunctious, beating people up. Mm-hmm. During the game, the two men began to argue and it escalated into physical violence.
Men.
Yeah. When Al Layton attempted to draw his revolver, James Everett stepped in to stop the fighting. He wrestled Layton to the floor, holding him there, telling him he didn't mean to hurt him in any way. He just wanted to keep him out of trouble. Those that had gathered around the two men urged Layton to drop the gun and for Everett to just let him get up. Everett stepped back and let the young man get up. Layton stood up and dusted off his clothes. He then leveled his revolver and fired two shots into James Everett, killing him instantly.
What a dork.
Yeah. But then he turned around and shot Yell in the shoulder.
Oh, gosh.
Reportedly making him yell louder than he ever had before. And then he ran to his horse and made a quick getaway.
Jeez, talk about chaos.
He turned himself in shortly after, surrendering to Sheriff John Mosley before posting bond. While he probably could have been free without ever even being captured with law enforcement the way it was, he had a good reason to think he could get away with it through the court system. That's just how it works. Yeah,
that's how everybody else did.
Yes. He came from one of the oldest and best known families in the county.
Course.
His cousin, Thomas A. Layton, held the offices of county and circuit clerk. Most of the county officers, including prosecutor T.C. Spellings and Sheriff Mosley, were friends and political allies of his family.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Additionally, local juries had gained a reputation for clearing lawbreakers. To some extent, since members of the jury needed to consider the expected outcomes of convicting men amongst whose family members they would have to live afterward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's an awkward picnic.
Oh, yeah. You gotta watch out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Regardless, a grand jury, which ironically included Nathaniel Kinney, indicted Layton for homicide. A continuance was granted with a trial date set for more than a year after the shooting in October of 1884.
Jeez.
The friends and family of Everett saw this case as kind of a test for the local courts to see if any punishment would come to the murderer or if corruption would win yet again. On October 22nd, 1884, the jury returned a verdict for acquittal for Al Layton sending the community into a tailspin of conspiracies and further providing to the citizens that a regulator group was needed to combat the corruption and lawlessness.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Yeah. Some alleged that prosecutor T.C. Spellings had accepted a bribe in exchange for sabotaging the case against Layton. Others accused County Clerk Thomas A. Layton of using his influence on behalf of his cousin, and still others accused the defense of plying the jury with alcohol.
We're all the above.
No hard evidence exists to substantiate any of these claims, although, according to one newspaper report, quote, it is admitted that the jury got drunk.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
So maybe somebody did supply alcohol to the jury.
My kind of jury duty.
Right. Just a few months later, 13 men met in the store that now belongs solely to Yell Everett. There were 13 men with, I said that already, mm-hmm. with, I was like,
how many men were there?
Was there 14? No. With Nathaniel Thinney.
You all right over there?
With Nat Kenny taking the lead. J.J. Brown, a prominent attorney in Forsyth, drew up a series of resolutions, which were signed by all the attendees. These resolutions established a vigilance committee, officially named Committee for Law and Order, for the purpose of assisting law enforcement officers in the performance of their duties. And I want to point that out right there. When they formed this group, the purpose was assisting local law enforcement officers in the performance of their duties. That's important to remember.
I have a feeling I know what happened.
They pledged they would at all times respond to the call of officers to enforce obedience to the law.
Mm-hmm. And then some.
Yes. If you see depictions of the Bald Knobbers, generally they're wearing these masks that are friggin' creepy. They would take pillowcases, cut holes in for eyes and mouth, and then they would like tie things around the top, around where their, let's say, bunny ears would be. But they looked like horns when they tied that stuff. They're just creepy looking. The original Bald Knobbers rarely, if ever, wore masks, and they had no rules regarding masks.
Wow.
So they clearly didn't have a COVID problem.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They did, however, wear a small badge made of red silk, approximately 5 by 2 inches, with the words "Stand Up for Taney County and Law and Order" stitched into them.
Okay.
Okay. The organization would remain a secret society to ensure the safety of members. Brown and Kinney would draw up a constitution and bylaws, complete with a membership oath for new recruits. There are no copies of the constitution and bylaws, since they, to preserve their secrecy, they decided to destroy them later. Several versions of the membership oath did survive, including one which the New York Sun later reprinted.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The oath represented the basic sentiments and purpose of the organization. Here it is.
You have it.
Of course.
Very cool.
Do you, in the presence of God and these witnesses, solemnly swear that you will never reveal any of the secrets of this order, nor communicate any part of it to any person or persons in the known world, unless you are satisfied by a strict test or in some legal way that they are lawfully entitled to receive them, that you will conform and abide by the rules and regulations of this order and obey all orders of your superior officers or any brother officer under whose jurisdiction you may be at the time attached, nor will you purpose for membership or sanction in the admission of anyone whom you have reason to believe is not worthy of being a member, nor will you oppose the admission of anyone solely on a personal matter. You shall report all theft that is made known to you, and you shall not leave unreported any thief on account of his being a blood relation of yours, nor will you willfully report anyone through personal enmity. You shall recognize and answer all signs made by lawful brothers and render them such assistance as they may be in need of, so far as you are able to or the interests of your family will permit, nor will you willfully wrong or defraud a brother or permit it if in your power to prevent it. Should you willfully and knowingly violate this oath in any way, you subject yourself to the jurisdiction of 12 members of this order, even if their decision should be to hang you by the neck until you are dead. So help me God.
Dead.
Yeah, that must have been a popular thing to say that 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I should look that up. Some people were unsure of the group, while others were ready to join immediately. Kinney called for a mass meeting to initiate new members. This meeting took place on Sunday, April 5th, 1885. According to James A. DeLong, Nathaniel Kinney's stepson, early that morning, Kinney went to the gathering place alone to guarantee its security. The group's founders had invited those they wished to recruit into the league earlier.
Mm-hmm.
At dawn, a small group of men moved toward the gathering place with a little reluctance, fearing that they were walking into a trap. Kinney welcomed them as they arrived at the clearing on the top of a hill. About 100 men showed up to the meeting. Nat Kinney rose to address the recruits in what witnesses described as a, quote, blood-stirring oration over the bloody shirt of J.M. Everett.
Wow.
Well, we don't know exactly what was said, of course. One newspaper printed the following that was said in closing. What will become of our sons and daughters? Our lives, our property, and our liberties are at stake. I appeal to you as citizens of Taney County to say what we shall do. Shall we organize ourselves into a vigilant committee and see when crimes are committed, the laws are enforced? Or shall we sit down and fold our arms and quietly submit?
Well, they've been doing that for a while, so they have to do something.
Yeah.
Well, is this the right way to go?
Who knows? I mean, maybe.
I mean, you're not getting no help from law enforcement or the courts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. No, I understand it. So, moving on. This may be a four-part episode.
We're already 20 in.
I know. The group voted to organize themselves into a vigilance committee, and the new recruits took the oath. Instructions were given regarding the rules and the secrets of the group, and Nat Kinney was voted chieftain of the order. Who the hell was going to say, no, I want to do that job?
For real? No, yeah. Thank you.
He would have just stepped on them and squashed them.
It's all yours, sir.
The first rule Kinney made was forbidding any written records to preserve the secrecy of the group.
There you go.
Which hinders if you're trying to research.
Mm-hmm.
The organization took on a military-style structure, subdivided into legions, each with a captain leading it. Most things that I read said that it was held, that this meeting was held on Snap's Bald, this first meeting. But I found an article about an interview with a woman that was alive during this time.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And she claims that the knob they met on actually had no name. According to Mrs. Mary Breeden, interviewed by the Springfield Press in 1930.
Wow.
The first meeting of the Bald Knobbers was held on the crest of a bald a short distance north of Kirbyville, men of the community having been called together by Captain Kinney. There are three bald knobs in this particular group, and their crests are completely barren except sparse growth of scrub cedar may be seen for miles. So you can see these for miles.
Mm-hmm.
These balds were but a short distance from Kinney's home. The peaks hold no distinctive name, being known to the residents of the community merely as Bald Knobs.
Well, there you go. I was wondering how this name came about.
Yes. So that's what the hills are called, knobs. If they have nothing on top, they're bald knobs or they're bald. I
did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
It just sounds weird.
So, it does sound weird.
People actually began to kind of joke about this group and call them the Bald Knobbers. And they were like, hey.
That's nice.
Love that. I'm keeping it. So it stuck. Most were unamused by the banding together of such a group and viewed them as something to laugh at.
Like, kind of a joke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they really weren't doing much of anything, actually, for the first few months. Mm-hmm. They had a big meeting. They were all excited. And
bunch of men getting together.
Nothing happened. Nat Kinney knew that it was going to take a bold move to assert his newly formed group and show that they really meant business.
So he's just sitting and waiting for that time.
Yep. Late one night, about 100 armed men rode into Forsyth. They lined up in precise formation around the jail where Newton Harrell was being held awaiting trial. Back on October 7th, 1884, a young man named Newton Harrell, he had killed Amos Ring, a man alternately described as his stepfather or his mother's lover. Mr. Ring had recently begun living with Harold's mother. She wasn't living with herself. It's fine.
I was confused for a minute.
His mother was a widow that was living in a cabin a short distance from Forsyth. So their domestic arrangement did not include the benefit of a clergy. Uh-oh. They were not married. Harold took offense at this, saying it was bad for his mother's reputation.
Weird.
Yes. So he went to his mother's home and he got into an argument with Amos. Taking offense at this treatment, Amos retrieved a piece of wood from the stove and advanced on him, tending to teach him a lesson.
Whoop up on him.
Yeah. Harold quickly seized the opportunity to settle his score and drew his revolver and shot the older man dead.
Wow.
Yes. When he saw the vigilantes outside his jail cell,
he's like, oh,
he began to scream hysterically. The Bald Knobbers, fetch the sheriff. And Sheriff McAfee, he was actually a charter member of the Bald Knobbers. They demanded he open the door to the jail, and he refused.
Like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, this ain't what we're doing. And begged them not to carry out any mob violence. Newton was a very lucky man. Or the Bald Knobbers had never actually planned to lynch him because they simply rode out of town.
Mm-hmm.
He said no, they just left.
I'm like, all right, fine. All right,
okay, whatever.
We tried.
Before departing, though, they entered the courthouse and draped a long rope with a noose over the judge's bench. Maybe to say, this better be what this guy gets.
Mm-hmm.
The actions of that night did get the attention of the community, and people began to choose sides for or against the Bald Knobbers. Mm-hmm. In the Ozark Hills around Taney County, there was a gang of criminals known as the Taylor Gang. Many of these men were brothers, or at least had the same last name, Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're the Taylor Gang.
That's so original.
Yeah. It took them a while to come up with it, but the Taylor family had moved to Nubbin Ridge, about 5 miles from Forsyth, from their home in Kentucky. The band of criminals were led by brothers Frank and Tubal Taylor. I don't know if they led them. They were a part of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very important to the story, so I think that's why people say, yeah, they were the leaders. Might have just been nobodies.
Mm-hmm.
They were notorious for their petty crimes, which included discharging firearms in public, carrying concealed weapons, brawling, and stealing cattle and chickens.
Sounds like a great clan.
They were proud of their complete disregard for the law, and on many occasions they would ride into town flashing around loads of cash and inviting the whole town to drink at their expense because they didn't work for their money anyway.
They stole everything, probably from the people.
That's what they said. Come drink at our expense. We don't work for our money anyway.
It's your money.
It's great. These guys were really just shitty people.
Mm-hmm.
And they even mutilated other people's cattle just for sport.
Wow.
Such happened when Alexander Kissy was speaking not so kindly of them in public, and the word got back to the Taylor brothers. They found 3 of his best cows and cut out their tongues, leaving them to starve to death.
Oh my gosh.
That's terrible.
That's awful, for sure.
Shortly after the incident at the jail with little Lucky Newton, Frank Taylor was shopping in a store that belonged to John Dickinson. Frank wanted to buy a pair of boots on credit, but Dickinson refused to extend him any more credit since he hadn't paid for anything he'd already gotten.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Frank was furious, and he cursed and threatened the store owner. Before he left, he knocked over several displays and left the store a mess of merchandise strewn about.
Gosh.
Ass. Frank then rode into Forsyth to find his brother Tubal.
Tubal?
Yes. Tubal had turned himself in for the maiming of the 3 cattle and was left in the custody of a deputy instead of in a jail cell. Frank found Tubal and the deputy sitting on the porch of Everett's saloon and rode up. He jumped off the horse and walked away. Suddenly, Tubal jumped up, mounted the horse, and rode away.
Oh my gosh. Let's just hang out on the saloon.
Why is he not in jail?
Yeah. Gosh.
The next day, the store owner, Dickinson, went to Forsyth to swear out a warrant on Frank Taylor for disturbing the peace. Dickinson had attended the Bald Knobber meeting that Sunday, and perhaps this emboldened him just enough to go and make that charge.
Mm-hmm.
Frank was arrested, but quickly released on bond. He hooked up with his brother, and on April 10th, 1885, the two headed for Dickinson's store looking for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
Dickinson was shot at point blank range in the face, breaking his jaw and knocking out several teeth.
Jeez.
Mrs. Dickinson came out to see what was going on, and the men turned their fire on her before fleeing the store.
Oh no.
Both of the Dickinsons survived.
How did he survive that?
He was shot in the face and in the shoulder. there was a $1,000 reward offered for the capture of the Taylor brothers, and on April 14th, they allowed friends to take them in.
Get you some money.
Yes. It was largely believed that the Taylors had their friends bring them in so that they could claim and share the reward money upon their release. And this rumor reached the ears of the Ballnobbers, who were determined not to let this go.
Right. This is their time to shine.
Yep. On the next night, April 15th, around 100 Ballnobbers rode into Forsyth and again surrounded the jail. Little Newton, who might have, you know, crapped his pants at this point, luckily had been moved to Greene County mm-hmm. by this point.
Or he would have really been.
Yeah. He'd be like, oh my God, not again. Nat Kenny rode around the square ordering people off the streets, while a couple members retrieved a sledgehammer from a nearby blacksmith shop. They didn't ask this time. Kenny took the hammer and knocked the door open, and the Ballnobbers stormed into the jail, pulling the Taylor brothers kicking and screaming from their cell. They were bound and placed on horses for a quick ride 2 miles northwest of town. Near Swan Creek, the Ballnobbers tied up two nooses over a big black oak tree, placed them around the necks of the brothers, and swatted the horses from under them.
And the rest?
They placed a sign on Tubal Taylor's shirt that read, "Beware. These are the first victims to the wrath of outraged citizens. More will follow," signed the Ballnobbers.
Oh my gosh, it has started.
It has started.
That's what they needed. That's what they was waiting on. Some their time.
Something. Mm-hmm. Something had to be enough. But it's also believed that maybe the reward thing is not true. You know, it happened so long ago, records. But it's also believed that he found out that they didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
So he went and they found out that they didn't die, so they went and turned themselves in, knowing they wouldn't face a murder charge at that point anyway.
That makes sense too.
Yeah, so it could be either way, but well, they're dead now.
Either way, doesn't matter.
Yeah. The sentiment of the public was divided regarding the Ballnobbers after the hanging of the Taylors. Some of the original members dropped out.
They're after like, this. I didn't sign up for this.
They said they joined to aid real law enforcement rather than take law into their own hands.
Mm-hmm.
There was even a group against the Ballnobbers started. They called themselves the Anti-Ballnobbers.
Oh, that's original, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. While there were a few people that wanted to see the vigilantes prosecuted, more folks were pleased with the outcome, and even more showed up to join, bringing the group to an estimated 300 men.
Wow.
The parents and family of the Taylor brothers moved to Marionville with no hope of their son's killers being brought to justice.
Marionville, that sounds familiar.
Yes. We got married there.
We did.
They weren't the only ones to leave. There was, in fact, a mass exodus of folks from Taney County during this time, driven out by the Ballnobbers.
Wow.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the Ballnobbers and what they're doing. The Ballnobbers would show up at a home in the middle of the night and fire a few shots in the air to get attention before issuing their warning to leave or face consequences.
Yikes.
They would leave a bundle of switches on the porch, one switch for each day before they would return and deal out punishment.
That's crazy.
Uh-huh. Ben Boyd received one of the first of these visits from the Ballnobbers. Four of them approached his house, and his dog alerted him, so he hid under the porch. They yelled for him to come out, and he refused. Like, dude, you just hung a couple guys a few days ago. No.
I'm not stupid.
Yeah. He said, yo, what do you want? So they explained that they received complaints, quote, that you have difficulty in distinguishing your property from that of your neighbors, and consequently, your neighbors are objecting to your residing longer in the community.
Okay, whoa.
He's a thief.
Yeah.
He was given 10 days to leave, but he didn't try his luck. He packed up his family and left for Arkansas by 10 a.m. the next morning.
I'm pretty sure I would, too.
Yeah. According to an anti-Ballnobber, one of the nighttime visits to the home of a family named Pruitt, including the beating included the beating of the wife and the baby in the home and the shooting death of the family dog.
Wow.
This is an anti-ball number that told this story, so...
Could be exaggerating a little bit.
It could be, but...
Beating a baby?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
The Baldnobbers paid an eviction visit to James Cofer, known as a man that never caused any trouble to anyone or anything whatsoever.
So they're kind of just taking this and running.
Yeah. They captured Edward Tuttle and held him prisoner for an entire day and night, telling him they were going to hang him and even having him write out a will.
Wow.
He was only set free alive because he promised to sell his land and leave the county. He took a considerable loss on the sale of his property and moved his family to nearby Christian County.
Why was they against him?
I don't know.
Gosh.
The Baldnobbers soon moved to kind of just evicting, punishing people that just inconvenienced them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
One man was driven out to keep him from testifying in a case involving a Baldnobber charged with assault.
See, they're just getting to the same level as the others.
There was no protection against the Baldnobbers. Even the justice of the peace left, saying he had no work because he wasn't a Baldnobber.
Wow.
40 Baldnobbers arrested two young men by the name of Cogburn, remember that name,
mm-hmm.
and took them before a judge who fined them $25 for carrying a concealed weapon. There was no warrant, nothing for this arrest.
Hmm.
These randos walked up to some guy, two guys, arrested them.
Quotations, air quotations.
And took them before a judge with no warrant, no due process, nothing.
That's crazy.
And they were fined.
How?
It's Taney County, man. I mean, I'm sure it's different today, but...
I'm pretty sure the judge was scared of them, the Baldnobbers.
These boys came from a rather good family. Their father was called one of the best men in the county and treasurer of the local Masonic Lodge.
Oh.
Their family will continue to play a part in this. About 20 Baldnobbers visited the home of John Hayworth in an attempt to drive him out. You see, John had recently leased a farm just outside of Forsyth that apparently several Baldnobbers wanted to purchase.
Oh.
As long as he leased the farm, they would not be able to buy it. They asked him if he intended to keep his lease, and he replied that he did, even if every ear of corn cost him a dollar.
Oh, wow.
They told him if he continued to lease the land, they would crack his neck before firing several shots into his home and riding away. I don't know how that story ended, but I do know that years later he did an interview with a paper telling his story.
Mm-hmm.
So he survived.
That's good.
I know that much. And I'm pretty sure he stayed there and he became part of anti-Baldnobbers. On December 19th, 1885, the Taney County Courthouse burned to the ground.
I wonder how that happened.
Very little of anything was saved.
Hmm.
The Baldnobbers, of course, blamed the corrupt politicians that had run the county for years. They believed they were trying to hide all the proof of their corruption, though they had plenty of opportunity to do that before they left office. Just saying. Others blamed the Baldnobbers for setting the fire in an attempt to destroy property records, making it easier for them to drive people off their land.
That sounds about right.
It was highly likely that the building just caught fire, though, really. Mm. The old courthouses were built of wood. They were heated with wood-burning stoves or open fireplaces. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
But with tensions already running high, the conspiracy theories were just way too easy to defer to.
Pointing fingers.
Yes. Andrew Cogburn.
Okay.
Remember the name?
I do.
Okay. He was a cousin to those two boys. He was one of those in opposition to the Baldnobbers. He had a long history of antagonizing Nat Kinney, often at his Sunday school in Oak Grove.
Wow.
Yes. At one point, there was a small wooden coffin hung on the door with a bullet inside and a note warning Nat Kenny. It was never proven, but a lot of folks believed it to be the work of Cogburn. Cogburn made up a little song called The Ballad of the Baldnobbers.
Oh my gosh.
Which just kind of made fun. He found it, yes. He found it amusing to mock the vigilantes who he saw as so self-righteous that they were above the law. He really seemed to be like this funny, easygoing young man. You know the type. Mm-hmm. Like just picks and don't give a shit. That's
invincible.
Kinda, yeah. So he picked on those that thought highly of themselves, which made Nat Kenny the perfect butt for his jokes.
Perfect target.
Kenny was obviously not a fan of this young man. On February, that's not even close, 28th, 1886, the tension came to a deadly end.
Uh-oh.
There were two versions of this story, but even in their own story, the Baldnobbers don't come off too great, in my opinion. On that evening, Nat Kenny received a message that Andrew Cogburn was at the Oak Grove Sunday School during the service. Kenny was not in attendance, but arrived shortly after he got this message.
Mm-hmm.
He brought with him his son, Paul. With but a few words spoken between Kenny and Cogburn, Nat Kenny shot and killed Andrew Cogburn. Whoa. Outside the church. The two different stories are, it was dark, he couldn't see him that well, he thought he reached for a gun, so he shot him.
Mm.
The other story was, he had no gun, he walked out with his hands in front of him and said, "How you doing, Cap?" Which sounds like him, yeah, in my opinion, but who knows? I don't see Nat Kenny with his reputation shooting somebody in cold blood in front of his son.
Right.
I don't think he would have done that. If he had done it, I don't think he would have had his kid there. And with his kid there, he wouldn't have chanced that. So I think it's somewhere in the middle. Probably. But the man who was with Cogburn said that he had no weapon on him,
mm-hmm,
at all. Paul, Nat's son, said he did have a weapon on him and it flew and fell to his feet whenever he fell.
Huh.
Who knows? So Nat told the parishioners to stay inside and he would tell them all when they could leave. Several Baldnobbers were in attendance and he asked them to come out and start a fire so the authorities would be able to see when they arrived. He just took control of the situation, mm-hmm, which, dude, you're the one who did the shooting. You need to sit down and not do anything.
Yeah, but nobody...
Not lead everybody and tell them how to run the investigation, mm-hmm, of you. So...
Here, let me burn all the evidence while I'm catching this fire.
For the coroner's inquest the next morning, Nat Kenny was let in by deputies because he was taken into custody.
Well, I'll be dang, that's a
surprise. Just wait. He was let in by deputies wearing his revolvers and carrying a double barrel shotgun. In custody, he's carrying his guns.
Why?
I think that's a clear message.
And he's doubled up on guns.
Yes. The jury, of course, ruled the homicide justifiable.
Of course.
This incident lit a fire in those that opposed the Baldnobbers. Mm-hmm. And the anti-Baldnobbers now became an organized group.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Taney County was split on the issue, and many wondered if Nat Kenny and his Baldnobbers had merely replaced the corruption with corruption that just better suited them.
Sounds like it. They wanted to be the corruption.
Yes. In the coming months, the tensions would lead to more conflict, violence, and much more death.
I'm glad we never lived through all that stuff.
No kidding.
Wow. Scary.
Mm-hmm. That is the end of this portion of the story.
You're stopping now?
Yes. I thought that was a lovely ending. Or, you know, like, cut off. Intermission.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of story to tell to finish telling the story, but I just wanted to have a time to kind of debrief, too. Let's talk about what's happened so far, since I was really trying to get through that, and hopefully it wasn't going to be 2 hours long. So, thoughts so far?
Well, what else do could happen at the time the ball knobbers were made, the group was made? Because law enforcement wasn't doing anything. The courts was corrupted. I could see the town putting together a group like that, but they're not following their agreement.
Exactly. So, from the research that I have done, it quickly turned to something else.
Escalated like, very quickly.
This power just became, oh my God, you know what we could do with this? Mm-hmm. Like,
and they ran with it.
We can take all the land. We can do whatever we want. Nobody's going to touch us because the judge, the sheriff, everybody is a bald number. They're our brothers, and they're not going to do anything to us. And that's just, again, replacing corruption with corruption that suits you better.
And they already knew the town folks wasn't going to do anything because they never did anything before.
Yeah, right. And so these poor people in town are just, okay.
Great, we have another one.
Yeah, it's just the opposite. And so I talked a little bit about the political structure and what was going on. So the political structure prior to the ball knobbers, it was all held by Democratic leaders, and they were completely corrupt. According to the ball knobbers, the public, I mean, it definitely seems they were completely corrupt. At the next election, I think it was 1883, all of the offices flopped to Republicans.
Wow.
Except for the one that had just won election in 1883. He actually remained in office, the only Democrat remaining in office. And so right before, you know, a couple years before the ball knobbers kind of banded together, the politics had switched from one party to the other, as they do when people get fed up with leadership. You see a switch the parties. So that had happened, and many of the ball knobbers, many of the, when they started, were ex-Union soldiers and Republicans. And those who opposed them were Democratic Confederates. And as it kept going, more and more of the Union sympathizers, not really sympathizers at that point because it's long after the war, but they switched and said, yeah, you took it too far. You know, I like what you started with. It was a great idea, but then you kind of fell off the tracks there. And so more and more people start joining this anti-bald knobber because they're seeing, and it's being reported, hey, this guy, they ran him off and he's never hurt anyone. He's never done anything wrong. He's calm. He's nice. He barely even talks to people, much less cause problems. Something didn't add up with this eviction, right? And so a lot of people thought maybe it could have been the taxes. Maybe he hadn't paid his taxes and they were privy to this because bald numbers owned the government at that time in the county, which blows my mind. But it had gotten to the point that instead of having a Democratic run corrupted county government, we now have a Republican run corrupt county government that is also being aided by vigilantes who are just taking whatever they want because they can, and nobody's going to take them accountable. So it's the exact same thing. It started with great intentions, but that power just poisoned until you're now exactly the reason, the thing you started to fight. So it's very interesting.
I can see something like that happening, though.
Yeah.
Like letting the power get to your head. It's just like people let some money get to their head.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. Sad for the community.
Yep.
And we're just getting started with this story.
Yeah, there's still a lot to go.
Oh, I bet. Mm-hmm. We're not even getting to the good stuff.
Well, I hope that was good stuff.
I mean, there's more, right?
It's kind of a big history lesson, and I was really worried about doing it because of that, because it's so history deep. But there's so much crime involved that I enjoy it. So hopefully everybody else enjoys it, too.
I'm sure they are.
And, I mean, I don't know. It's not been that many years ago that I finally learned what the ball numbers were. I thought it was a show on Branson.
It is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, where the name came from, what it means, and all that. So maybe other people don't know that, or maybe I'm the only one.
Oh, no. If I count, I didn't know about it either.
Of course you count. You always count.
Oh, you're too kind.
So let's do reviews, because I don't want to leave that out.
We had another review. It was an updated one.
Oh, I love those.
I do too. Diva Diana.
She's the one that talked about loving the episode on Momo, wasn't she?
Yes. She loved our Momo.
I thought so.
Yeah. And she still loves us. 5 stars. So that's thanks. Great.
Thank you so much, Diva Diana. If you want anything from us, email us and let us know what it is.
What? We have stickers, and more stickers.
Yeah, we have stickers.
Where you at?
I don't know. Where'd you go right there? Well, I was just thinking, like, is there something else we should get to give people?
I don't know. Nobody even wants our stickers.
I know. That would cost a lot of money, too. Like, we ain't making money doing this, so I can't give away too much.
We'll have to do something.
We'll give you a free 5-night cruise to the Bahamas.
You better calm yourself.
Yeah, we can't do that. Anyway, so that's fun. Next week, I will finish this story.
I like it.
I guess.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, because next week should be a ghost story.
No, we're not doing that.
I don't think so either, but...
We got to finish this one. We can't leave people hanging. We can't leave Terry hanging.
I think there actually might be a ghost story that goes along with this one if I can find enough details to do it. So it could be a 3-week bald number.
Wow. I like it.
Extravaganza.
Though. Happy Easter, bald numbers.
All right. Well, this weekend, I'm keeping all 4 kids, all of my nieces and nephews.
And I am so glad I'm working.
I think Bradley and Nick are coming over to help wrangle them. So
you have got to finish this up before the weekend.
Yep. That's fine. We'll do it. Yeah, it's exciting. My boss told me today that she's still listening, but she feels kind of like she's intruding on my personal life when she listens. So she waits to get a backlog so she doesn't feel like she's listening at the moment and it's not like involved in my life outside of work.
She's adorable.
I know, like, how considerate is that? And it's, I'm awesome, like, but what do you mean you're not listening to my podcast?
Wait a minute, intrude, what are you talking about? It doesn't bother me that she
selfish listens. Me is like, no, listen.
Have she rated yet? Have she gave us stars yet? Does she have an iPhone?
Yeah.
You need to ask these questions.
I should. I'd be like, where's your review? She'd be like, prove that you're listening. I'm Diva Diana. Hello. That would be weird. Oh, shit. Anyway, funny. No, I thought that was cute. That was sweet. Considerate to think, because I wouldn't have thought of something like that.
Yeah, me either. When you told me that, I was like, what does that even mean? Like, why? All right, we better let everybody go.
We've kept you almost an hour. So thank you all for listening. Sorry that we're late again, but these things are just going to happen. I have to let it go and not cause myself so much anxiety and stress over everything.
Quit apologizing. They understand.
Thank you very much for understanding. You guys are amazing when I say I have to be late for something.
So. And then next week, we're doing part 2.
Bald Knobbers part 2.
Okay. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Have a great week. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We love you so, so much.
Bye.
Bye.